Stories of innovation and success from the vibrant communities of rural Nova Scotia. This is Ignited.
Hey, welcome to Ignited, the podcast, where we celebrate innovation and rural success. I'm Wade Cleveland. I work for a rural innovation hub called Ignite. We help build vibrant economies in rural Nova Scotia by bringing together startups and industry, youth, and community. Now, this is the fifth and final episode of this season's Women Founders Series podcast, and I've had a great time helping to tell these stories of women founders and their journeys. And you're not likely to find a more inspiring story of resiliency than the story of my guest this week, speaker, adult educator, coach, and author Debbie Adams. A degenerative eye disease took Debbie from a military career to unemployment and forced her to reinvent herself completely. She's been through it all and now teaches others what she has learned about what it takes to survive and to flourish. It is really great to meet you. I already feel like I know you. We've talked a lot, but this is the first time we actually get to talk, you and I, together in person.
And I'm excited.
Me too. I want to hear your story. We're going to start right from the start because, to me, what you do reflects very much back in what you have done. Did you start off as a mechanic?
I did. The first cohort of women in the Army, 1980, and I was one of those first women become a journeyman, and I loved it. Absolutely, absolutely loved it. Yeah.
It sounds like a lot of fun, actually.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. For a 17-year-old, you know, there was a lot of hard times, too. Like, let's not sugarcoat it. It was an environment that wasn't always welcoming. But, it was like an adventure.
But that didn't last necessarily because of sight loss, right?
Yes. I was in the Army for 11 years. It happened kind of suddenly, but, well, backing up a bit, it was 1991, you know, first Persian Gulf War. You know, they were looking at sending me over to Germany with the Royal Canadian Regiment and going to Turkey to hand out food supplies, so I was getting a medical. And in the midst of that medical, I drive there in my brand new Monte Carlo, and they tell me I'm legally blind. Like that day, now imagine.
I can't imagine.
No.
And you always had been, but just didn't realize? Is that how it worked?
Well, it's degenerative, so I certainly did not always, you know, I always had my peripheral vision, but it was slowly decreasing. But, you know, our eyes are amazing. Like, you scan, you don't know what you can see. Like, you sitting there, I have no idea how much peripheral vision you have, right? So during this test, you know, I had 20 degrees, and 20 degrees is the, like, you're legally blind point. So from there, it was like, lose your driver's license. And then I didn't know that would result in me losing my career. And I was a high performer, not just, it was a shock.
That is not the easiest thing in the world to go through.
It is not.
So how did you deal with it?
It took me a decade to land on my feet. I mean, I was out, and it was at a time, like now when veterans transition, they have a few years of support if you become disabled, yada, yada. And I wasn't injured at work or any of that kind of stuff. But, military subculture, you're in. I joined at 17. I was like fully indoctrinated in, or inculcated into this unit thing. And then I'm done. And it took me 10 years to land on my feet. I'm 60 now. I mean, we're talking a long time ago. But went to university, graduated when I was 45, did a year of law, lots of stuff. There you go, Cole's notes.
But that's really impressive. I you say about, you know, taking 10 years to land on your feet, and I understand that, and there would be a lot of, hesitate to say trauma, but it's probably, it's traumatic.
It's trauma.
There's no way around it. So how do you get past that? How do you deal with that? And that's part of what you do now, is help people develop the mindsets that it takes to kind of move forward.
Basically just in the money piece. So I'm totally in the money piece. And it isn't recently, somebody said you moved from heart to server, because military is all about service. And back in those days, our military were very poorly paid. I always tell the story about when I was stationed in Edmonton. I was a single woman, and we got a little bit of a living out allowance because the economy, you know, was so expensive there, much like Halifax now. But if you were married and had children, you could top up your military pay with welfare. So that's poorly paid. So think about that for a second. Like, I wasn't in it for the money, but I loved it. I was a lifer. I was, serve until age 55, all of the staff. And now I'm on the money side of the house, right? I'm teaching people how to go from heart serve to profit motive, which is totally different. So backing up a little bit, wait, I did all that education, and like any blue-collar person, I thought that a university degree is going to open doors. As a matter of fact, when I went to the equivalent of a Nova Scotia Works to see if I could get a resume, they said, you know, the easiest place to get accommodated is with a government job. So I went to university with, you know, then I'd get this government job. But I applied for thousands of jobs in my mid-40s. Nobody would hire me. But now I'm not only facing the barriers because of disability, but now I'm old.
Yeah, and that's a real thing. Ageism is huge. When you're 45 years old and you're applying for a job and you're saying, I don't have experience in this.
None.
You're not likely to get hired.
100%. Not likely to get hired. So I had this opinion of myself as a high performer, and I saw what I was capable of in the military. Now I face this in the outside world. And all of the back end of that is poverty and raising a child on my own and all of the stuff, you know, bankruptcy, the whole works, trying to pay my way through university. After all those rejections, somebody said to me, why don't you start a business? And I did, may have dropped a little F-bomb and said, you know, what the F would I sell, literally? And they said, you know, Debbie, if I knew what you knew, I'd be a millionaire and you're going bankrupt. And I said, after I got a little peeved, you know, I went back and said, what do you see? Like, what do you see that I don't see? Like, what could I do? And that was, an inflection point. It was, okay, I'm going to become an entrepreneur. I'm going to do this. And I'd like to say the rest is history. 13 years ago, I opened storefront. I started to sell my knowledge. I started doing income tax because I was doing my own. And then I learned a little skill, and then I got into the business, you know, the blue-collar guys coming in with a mess with CRA, so I'd get them straightened out, and I learned skills. And as I would learn skill one day, teach it the next. But the biggest piece was charging what I was worth. It was like, that was foreign to me. I was more likely to have you come through the door with a big problem, and I would solve it, and it's like, you know, took me an hour, $50. You know, yeah. As opposed to the $3,000 you should have paid me kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So pushing through that money mindset piece, when you come out the other end, it's like most things when you're trying to change, like a mindset, pendulum swings too far the other way and people start to say, well, she's all about the money. But I'm not all about the money. I'm all about getting through my internal bias against money because I come from a background of people who never really had much. So we had all kinds of judgment against the affluent. And I did it. And I've written 4 books around the topic of money mindset. And I'm on a mission to teach people to be okay. I think we're all operating, like from my own experience and hundreds that I've met along the way are like me, we're all operating at very limited capacity. We have way more potential than we know. And you can start and reinvent yourself at any age and stage. I still have the same disabilities. You know, I'm legally blind. I have major depressive disorder, anxiety, all the stuff that goes along with trying to live a life with a disability. I don't drive. All kinds of barriers still. But I have this knowledge base that I can charge large for. So who's your daddy?
And that's absolutely true. And I don't know if it's entrepreneurs generally or if it's rural Nova Scotia or rural areas generally. There's this attitude that if you're asking a large amount of money, who do you think you are? And I think that many entrepreneurs that I run into, and this is a conversation I have fairly often, many entrepreneurs have great skills and are terrified to charge what they're worth.
Right.
That's an issue.
Yeah, 100% is an issue. But, you know, I do my minors in psychology, and I took a political science degree, which is really all about power and why it is that people do what they do, right? And I study a lot around psychology because there's all kinds of things that play, like crabs in a bucket and tall poppy syndrome and attitudes that people will have for you about you if you try and raise yourself above the population, all this jazz. It hurts us. And we live in a place where people call the province, a have-not province, but the province itself, like the land, has no attributes. If we're saying have-not province, we're saying have-not people. And I know we're not have-not people, but we struggle with understanding our worth.
It's a tough thing. That leads me, and we will get back to kind of your story.
No, that's okay.
But let's talk about this, because here we are. How do you get past that? And you're one of those people who kind of speaks on that and writes on that.
Yes.
How do you get past that?
And I'm really teaching from experience. That was my issue. You know, in the first 4 or 5 years of business, when I had the storefront, I was charging a lot less than what other people were charging. And I was getting irritated because they were getting paid more. And I was feeling this, I knew I was as good, but I'm not getting paid what they're getting paid. I've lived in 8 provinces, so I have a network of people across the country. And, you know, when we come together, I see what appears to me like an arrogance. Not an arrogance, just a self, they're self-assured about their worth and they don't mind stepping into that space. So I've had to get coaching around it myself. But when it came to time, I'll give you a very concrete example. I was doing lunch and learns for $500. And then I went to this meeting with professional speakers and this guy said, I get paid $5,000 for doing this talk. And I'm like, holy Hannah. I probably didn't say Hannah, but you know what I mean. You're picking up what I'm laying down. So my next quote I put in was a $5,000 quote. And I had to do it like there was a part of me internally that struggled with this. But I had to do it. I had to do it because I knew that I was in the same at the same level that he was. I ended up like closing at $37.50 at the time. But once you go through that wall, you're never going back. $37.50 becomes your new benchmark and you go on from there. So I say to my clients, you know, when I'm trying to get them to double their prices, and I've helped literally hundreds of people say, got to double your price, but I can't feel it inside. Well, because I use the apprenticeship model, for coaching. So I use what I learned as a mechanic. You know, when you say, I can't figure this out, or I don't know how to rebuild this engine, or whatever, how do I get? You get the tricks of the trade. You say, that's okay. I know you don't get it now, but listen, try it this way. Put your tongue on this side of your mouth or whatever and get her done. So in coaching, I do the same thing. I get that you're not confident charging that for that knowledge that you're bringing. But for a minute, you're going to lean on me and I have confidence in you. And I know when you get out the other side of bold action, confidence is a byproduct. Confidence is a byproduct of bold action. People are waiting for confidence to take bold action. Doesn't work that way. This is now my new heart to serve is all about getting people to like step up. You're never going to outperform your internal money set point. So let's work on your set point.
I want to tell you about our Igniting Women in Business series at Ignite, providing rural women entrepreneurs an opportunity to connect, learn, and build their network through a series of initiatives, including a speaker series, gala, and retreat. We hope to inspire and empower rural women in business across the province. The theme is relearning through a women's lens. The sessions offer a space for women to discuss challenges that are faced by rural women in entrepreneurship, with opportunities to learn, network, and socialize. For more information on Igniting Women in Business and to sign up for our events newsletter, visit igniteatlantic.com.
So let's go back to your story. You started a storefront. You were charging money. You were having a little trouble with the charging bit. I understand that. What happened next? Were you speaking at that point? Where did the writing go? And I'm asking a whole bunch of questions all at once,
no.
I know, but...
Yeah, no, that's okay, because I started as soon as I went through university. So when I ended up at university, I was like first generation at university. Honestly, first year, and my professors, who I'm still in contact with, will tell you, I didn't know how to use a calculator. I had never written a paper. I was very, you know, I was like 41 years old and really extremely vulnerable. You know, and I can still cry about it. So I started to think about and understand, and that was the first time, Wade, that somebody had said, Debbie, you're smart. I mean, I was a half-decent high school student.
But you didn't think of yourself that way, and that comes from inside. Maybe it comes from being told things, too.
Right.
But it comes from inside. You have to believe it yourself
in
order for it to be true.
Absolutely, 100%. So while I was there, I started to look at the education of, you know, pedagogy of the oppressed, the education of at-risk adults. I started to get really curious about this. And in 2011, I went to Ottawa. So, you know, the Women's Worlds came to Canada and they were looking for people to talk on topics. And I spoke on a panel about the education of at-risk adults. And I used what they called an autoethnography, which is your story. And I talked about the things that I had pushed through to get an education, and how I didn't give up, and how determined I was, and why I was determined, and what support I needed, and how some of the professors that I met along the way who understood my vulnerability held my hand a little more. You know, they were like, Debbie, I see brilliance in you. It hasn't been fostered and nurtured and grown, and I'm going to help you through that. So I was curious about that. Then when I got into the tax business and I met all these guys coming into me, now they would be people who had been through a program like some of the local programs I won't mention, but they had gotten access to money, but they had an issue, and the money was an issue. And so they were coming in with businesses, maybe 19-20 employees, not bringing home a paycheck for themselves yet after all these years, you know, living hand to mouth kind of thing. And, you know, they needed to charge more, but they had all of these judgments about the people that were, I wanted them to bid on like tier two tenders. I went to law school, so, you know, along the way I've picked up a lot of information. So as I was starting to help these people, what I was noticing was, and this is where impact pricing comes in, because sometimes when I tell people how much I charge, they'll, you know, have a sharp intake of breath and say, just saying, man. And I think the impact of your words on people. So I saw the impact on my clients as they were coming back year over year saying, you know, I did what you said. You know, I helped them with the quote or whatever, but still undervaluing what I was doing. Then I got good at it, right? Then I started to understand, and I got courageous enough to, instead of rescuing everybody that came through the door, I would give the Knights of Columbus 10 tax returns for low-income seniors, and anybody else who came in after that was like, sorry, I'm not your doormat. You're going down the street. I'm not a charity. Nobody was funding me. So as I started to develop that confidence, I started to just make a note of what I did. And I wrote from my perspective, and I researched, you know. And I've never stopped learning, you know. I did adult education at San Ivex. I'm doing an MBA at Dell, yada, yada. So all of that to say that most of it has been from my own experience, and then I connected with colleagues who were able to enrich my knowledge base like you would.
Okay, you started writing.
Yes.
The ones I know is The Law of Attraction for the Skeptic, which I can't wait to read, and Love Affair with Education.
Yes.
What are the other ones? Which one did you write first?
Oh, what I wrote first in 2011, I needed a bit of money for a website. Went to a talk with a guy who said he wrote a book in a week, and I said, I can write a book in a week. I have nothing but time on my end. I wrote Single Again, Now What? A Practical Guide to Meaningful Connection. I was divorced. I was doing online dating. I'd worked in occupational health and safety, and I thought, I'm going to do a little workshop in the community and get a little bit of dough. I sold 500 copies of this little book with a workshop to seniors.
Oh, that's awesome.
That was the first book, but I didn't know what I was doing. I was winging it. I had no money. I had to ask friends, you know, to lend me some money to get her done, but I got her done. And this is what's important. Done is better than perfect. It had all kinds of things wrong with it. I still use it as a teaching tool. The next book was Money Mindset. Oh, Changing My Mind About Money Helped Me Succeed as an Entrepreneur. It was an ebook. Now I figured out how to do ebooks. Now I start teaching. Because that's what I do. I learn it yesterday, teach it tomorrow. I don't wait. And then Dreaming Big, Being Bold, and this one.
Really, yes. Really interesting.
And now I'm doing, 12 weeks of writing with a group of people, and I'm writing 12 non-negotiables for first-generation success.
So when you decide that this is how you're going to earn a living, if you will.
Yeah.
I mean, you were at a storefront doing accounting basically for
right.
a while, and then realized, wait a minute, I have something legitimate to share with the writing, with the speaking. What do you do? I know you write the book, but then when it comes time to do the talking, is it cold call? Do you say, look, I want to speak, or does someone come to you?
Oh.
How'd that all happen?
Yeah, I like that. So they were together. I did all of it concurrently. So as these clients came in with bigger problems, like I do their taxes, and then they'll ask me a question, you know, needed something done. Well, you got to pay me. You know, I'm sending you an invoice if I say one more word. And they would start to pay me. And then I'd go out in the community. I'd always been talking to the community because I had this sense of giving back. So ever since I went to school, I went to the library and talked to parents about disabled children and what they were capable of. And I had this urge to bring information back to the community. So I went to Digby for the first time in 2012 and did a talk at the library. I think about 40 women came in and I talked about reinventing yourself. And, I think I was 50 at that time. So I'd always been talking. That wasn't new. But then I started charging for the talks. So I'm doing the taxes, and in 2018, I took a course with somebody out of the States, and they were going into the a learning management system, Kajabi, and I thought, holy Hannah. See, when I opened a storefront in Sackville, Wade, I didn't do market research because I didn't even know it was a thing. You know, I'm winging it.
You're figuring it out as it goes along.
Right, on the fly. And I very quickly figure out that I'm up against free and people like free here. So I'm up against the seeds and the CBDCs and all of this jazz. And I'm thinking, holy, I based this on my clients that they needed like somewhere to go to learn business skills. But there's a lot of that here. So I needed to reach a market outside of my locale. So I went into the Kajabi learning management system, still doing taxes, still doing training. Started with small courses, like cheap courses, $100, and then worked my way up to now I have a VIP portal with a bank of courses and I take on coaching clients. But in 2021, not till 2021, I shut down the taxes and I sold it.
Amazing.
Yeah, so this mechanic at 40 who couldn't get a job, who believed that I was washed up, who was like living on Canada Pension Disability, and I'm like there because of what I believe. And now I'm 60 and I'm thinking, I might give Elon Musk a call. See if he needs a hand. Just kidding.
But I love it. That's fantastic. That is an amazing story. And it has elements of everything from issues that you have dealing with the military, because it can't be easy, to dealing with everything as a woman, to be dealing with everything as a woman who's getting older, because those are all things that people look at, and someone with a visual impairment and on top of that. You think of those kind of things. That's amazing to me. That's true resilience and the refusal, absolute refusal, to give up.
It is. It is. That's enough. Okay. Yes.
Right. Not trying to make you cry. This isn't Barbara Walters.
It is. It's been hard. It's been hard. But my mission now is to, and I do lots of stuff. Like I have a scholarship at Mount St. Vincent for a single mom, single parents going through school, yada, yada. All of the stuff that I got help with along the way, giving back. That's just part of who I am. But I would really like to shake people up a little and say, you have no idea what you're capable of.
How often do you speak now?
Oh, my. Probably 50 times a year.
And on top of that, you have to have a driver for all of that as well.
I do.
Because you can't drive.
And in this day and age, some of that speaking is online, as you know.
Of course.
And what was nice was that I went online in 2018. So in 2020, when COVID hit, I was already well entrenched in online. So I had a little bit of a thing. I sold a workshop during COVID called How to Remain Laser Sharp Focused When the Wolves Are in the Kitchen. And I sold that across Canada for people whose business had come to a hard stop. And now they couldn't pay the bills. But, I've already been through bankruptcy and out the other side. So I know that there's life after all of those trying moments. But
that in and of itself is a huge message.
Right.
Can we talk a little bit about resiliency and that mindset? Because sometimes, for me, I think for everybody, when the weight gets down on you, man, it is hard to get up off your knees. How do you get through that?
I think like my childhood in rural Newfoundland, in case you didn't detect that accent.
I never would have known.
My parents were in a car accident when I was 12. Five kids, 13, 12, 11, 9, 8. And my mother had traumatic brain injury. And for the rest of her life, she's still living. My father died during COVID. So I was 12 when I started parenting myself. So the resilience started early. Part of my own transition into disability had to do, part of the struggle was because my mother's ability to parent was impacted by her disability, I had all of this internal stuff. Let's just call it what it is. Nobody wants to be disabled, although we all want to show concern for the disabled, but nobody actually wants to be there.
No, of course
so
not.
I struggled with those same things. So I've had to overcome a lot, and it has really developed that overcoming muscle. You know, I know I'm going to be okay out the other end of it. But Wade, you're worn down by that, right? Like, so there's part of me that's compromised. So every now and then I have to tuck in for a little, you know, out of the wind kind of thing, and a little bit of counseling, a little bit of self-care, and a little bit of like, I can't do it today, guys. You know, you're vulnerable.
You know what? I think in the same way that you have to convince an entrepreneur to charge what they're worth and to kind of overcome the fact that they feel maybe that they're not worth that.
Right.
I think everybody has to learn that they have to give themselves room to recover and to grow, because that's the only way it works. You have to make people accept that there's weakness there and that they have to, you know, allow themselves that and not be ashamed of it.
Oh, this is it. In a world that loves perfectionism, in a world that's all, like, if you look at social media, it's all about the optics and, you know, to look in a certain way. That's nothing. My life has been an absolute shit show, excuse me.
But everybody's has to a degree.
Everybody, right.
Everybody's going through the same
100%.
Thing. 100%. No matter what Facebook might try to tell you.
Right. And so in the midst of that, which is why, you know, people like to work with me, because they're all imperfect when they come to me. And it's like, you know, some days you need a shovel to pick them up, but we're going to get through that. And I think it also speaks to like leaning on each other. It's not, you're never doing it on your own. I can't tell you. I remember one day laying on my couch and a good friend came over. I'm laying on the couch and I'm crying, saying, I can't remember what I can do. And she'll tell you that. I could not remember. She was trying to get me to write a competency statement for a contract. And I'm like, I can't do anything. You know, in the meantime, I'd published books, done all this stuff. But that was a moment. And as long as we know that, like, in those moments, you can still get up. And there's a lovely poem, I don't know it's by, but it says, get up and win the race. You know, a kid is running in a race and he keeps falling behind, and his dad's in the stands and he says to him, get up and win the race. The race was over, but his winning was just going across the finish line at his own pace. So that's it. And along the way, if you can get like a pocket full of money, power to
that's
you, buddy.
Too.
Power to you. Well, in this day and age, like, let's not shy away from the money topic, because look at what's going on around us that could easily be solved with money. And if we all maximize our own capacity, it would take pressure off the safety net.
Money can't buy happiness, but it sure makes the French fries easier to buy.
Oh, yeah.
Debbie, it has been an absolute blast talking to you. Thank you so much for this.
I'm delighted.
To find out more about Debbie and what she does, visit her website, PeopleCanBiz, that's BIZ.com, and follow her on LinkedIn. To find out more about rural innovation and what Ignite does, check out IgniteAtlantic.com. And you can follow Ignite Atlantic on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. And follow me on LinkedIn as well. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love it if you subscribed to Ignited, shared us with your friends, and gave us a good review. And remember, you can find past episodes anytime by looking over our archive wherever you download your pods. We'd love to hear from you. Any comments or suggestions about the podcast or who you'd like to hear on it, perhaps that's you, are most welcome. Just email me, Wade, W-A-D-E, @IgniteAtlantic.com. I'm Wade Cleveland. Thanks for listening. Talk soon.